Please let me know. It seems to be like it's good here, it's bad there. Other places, not so much. I've been like walking around doing speed tests all over the place. I also have 20% battery on this phone, and in my naivety, I thought I will plug in the power bank and I'll clip it onto the tripod here somewhere, and then I'll plug in the external mic as well. And then I remember that whole thing where Apple removed the headphone jack because, what was it? Because Brave or Courageous or something like that. Anyway, I'm in Thailand. G'day. Fun fact with Thailand. There's this place, they put these little clip-on coasters on the bottom. I'm still not entirely sure why, but I think it's so, you know, you got a normal coaster and it's always in like one place on the table, and then you get a clip-on coaster and you can put the wine anywhere you want and the coaster follows you around. Ingenious, ingenious people here, the Thais. Right, I do see people joining. I got my iPad down here as well, so that's nice to know it's working. Ben, Brian, Ken, g'day. Welcome. Thank you for joining. Let me kick off with the formalities. Let's do the sponsor. It's a different sponsor this week for the first time in a long time. Not an all-new sponsor. It is ePass by DTAC. I've spoken about DTAC, I'm sure, earlier this year. I'm sure last year as well. Folks that I have met in person as well. It's always nice when there's a sponsor that is actually a real person behind the strap line and the URL. No ePass protected password has ever been cracked and won't be found in any leaks. Give it a try. Millions of users use it. So look, ePass is genuinely worth a look. Enterprise Password Analytics, the only solution in the world to provide an insight on enterprise password security. And like I say, they are real people that I have met in my hometown on one of their visits. So please go and check out ePass by DTAC. And a big thanks to them for sponsorship this week. Now, I seem to start each one of these lately not too sure about what I'm going to talk about, and then getting to the point where it's like, well, that ended up escalating very quickly. And I'm also very, very conscious that if I'm working on 20% battery, I'm not sure how far we're going to get through here. So we're going to sort of go to some extent, and then things are just going to stop working. So let me try and prioritize this. I really want to talk about the social stuff because I've been on holidays. I have seen a lot of the social commentary. I have not commented because I know it's just going to blow my timeline up with all the people on Twitter who don't like being on Twitter and are very upset about being on Twitter. Maybe a little bit first about where I am. What is this island? Jeez, there's a gazillion different, and incidentally, that's about one mouthful of wine through, but I often do this, start and then look for a little bit of context. We've been, like when I did the video last week, I was in Bangkok. Now, obviously, massive metropolis, very, very interesting in its own way. We then went to Rayleigh Beach, which was a fascinating area. We had about four nights there. Very, very interesting place for Charlotte in particular. She was there when the tsunami hit in 2004 and ended up evacuating out of places and seeing all sorts of destruction. So for her to come back, what are we now, like eight and a half years later, and see it again with a family and a different life and everything was poignant, I think, for her. So that was really fun. Beautiful, beautiful spot. A lot of monkeys over there. No monkeys on this island. This is Koh Yanoi. It's about a half an hour boat ride away. And it's beautiful. Like, so much of this scenery is from movies you've seen before. During the week, we went to PP Island. PP Island is where they shot The Beach, the movie The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio many years ago. Around here, I forget which Bond it was. It was a Roger Moore Bond where they had one of these epic islands that just sort of raise up very vertically straight out of the water. I will find out what movie that was because I want to go back and watch it again now. But it's like every time you go around a corner, it's like a postcard or a movie. It's just epically, epically pretty. So we're here for a few nights before we go to Phuket for a little bit and then head back home because school. But we're gonna make the most of it while we're here. Now, looking at what I put in the tweet, which is the same thing that I posted everywhere else, the first topic here was the social media. Now, I realized just as I posted this to half of the social media channels, I just saw Roland's question. It wasn't Skyfall. It was a Roger Moore movie. Of course, Skyfall is a Daniel Craig movie. So no, it wasn't that one. The social. All I said in the title was the social media. And the reason why all I said that, Man with the Golden Gun, says Roland. That could well be right. That was definitely Roger Moore. The reason why I said the social media as a topic is I make bullet points as I'm thinking about what I'm going to talk about. And I wasn't sure what to say after that. I had a few words that I think would be an accurate description of everything at the moment. I thought, no, I'll think about it. And then I forgot. And I just literally copied and pasted in a rush before starting this. And I think maybe the social media is a reasonable sort of umbrella term for what's going on here. Now, obviously, since last week, Twitter and the new overlord came out with some rate limits. And there was a rate, I think it was a rate limit of like 600 tweets a day, and then it was 800, and then it was 1,000. And I find this is a fascinating thing to watch. And at the end of the day, I really don't think it has much consequence on me. We'll just go where all the people are, which at the moment is still Twitter, but I'll come back to that. I think the fascinating thing about it is I'm trying to filter out, as I read all the responses on social, the pragmatic, sensible, accurate stuff that is actually consistent with the reality. Now, that could be anything from the financial realities of running a platform like that through to the realities of where the people are, or the realities of what it is that people want on a platform. From the particularly as it relates to Twitter and Musk, the hyperbolic, we're angry with him because of whatever other reasons, it doesn't matter what happens, we're going to be angry with him. So when you see something like this, which on the surface of it, frankly, looks a bit shit, because it stopped people from reading some tweets, it's very, very hard to know where do I get information to actually understand the impact of this. And I'll give you a good example. And I was tempted to ask this, and I just knew if I did, it would distract me from my holiday. For example, I am curious how many tweets most people actually see in a day. Is it less than 1,000 for those who might be the heavy users and they pay for their Twitter Blue? I don't even know what they call it anymore. The 13 bucks or whatever it is I pay a month, Aussie bucks. You know, that's 10,000. That seems extraordinarily high. I've certainly never seen a rate limit. But for the normal folks out there, and if you're listening to this, and you're hopefully getting a sense of the tone and the sentiment from me verbalizing this as well, I'm kind of curious, like, how many tweets do you actually see per day? Now, perhaps part of Twitter's failing is I don't think there's a way of figuring that out. I don't think I can go to my profile and see, you saw 675 tweets today. And then I go, okay, well, that wouldn't have affected me then. You know what I mean? So I guess my point here is that I think it is very unclear what the actual impact on people is. William says, they've changed the algorithm so it's hard to see the tweets from people you follow, and too many bra ads. I don't get those, but I don't know what you're searching for, mate. Who knows? What I've found, if I flick over to my iPad now just to get my facts straight, if I go to where am I at? If I go to home and I go to For You, there's a whole bunch of crap in there. And frankly, some of it, I feel it's a little bit ironic. Elon's often talked about regrettable minutes spent on social media. And I think he particularly applies that term to TikTok. And I agree with that term. It's like time that you have spent on social and it has not enriched your life in any meaningful way. And if you spent much time on TikTok or watching your kids spend time on TikTok, you'll understand what he means by regrettable minutes. But what I'm finding is that For You does have a bunch of stuff with regrettable minutes, and it sucks me in. That out of context human stuff, every time I see those videos, it's like, holy shit, that's really, really, you know, it's just like taking my attention. But I can always go to following, and I do find that when I go to following, I only see stuff from people I'm following. Now, I don't know if your mileage varies or not, but as I flick through, that seems to be what I'm getting. So anyway, regardless, it's not kind of the point. I think the rate limit was more the discussion here. So if we were to be pragmatic about it, I think the question is, how many tweets do people normally see in a day? Does the rate limit actually impact them in any meaningful way? And then the other thing, and this is again where it's hard because they're just not clear on it, is it's meant to be temporary. Is it a week and then we'll all get over it and move on? Is it a month? Well, that really starts to sort of impact your viewing pleasure of the platform if it is actually trimming the number of tweets you can see. I don't know, they haven't said. And I think that that's the pragmatic way to look at it. Like, does this actually impact my viewing experience? And if so, for how long? I've seen a lot of commentary around, well, they didn't play the Google, didn't pay rather their Google Cloud bill. And that's why, it's not because of the bots and everything. And that may be the case. I don't know. The problem is that we're always hearing information with a bias on it. And that's probably a fair commentary on all the socials at the moment. It is so hard, whether it's the social or the media, there's always a bias. And you're constantly looking at something, trying to figure out if it's fair and accurate or if it's reflective of a bias. Makes it very difficult to know what the hell is actually going on. Roland says, don't ruin people's favorite hobby of being upset by Twitter policy changes. And it is tempting to joke about it, isn't it? And it is a little bit entertaining to watch people lose their shit over it as well, because we've seen stupid stuff, you know, like the cannot have links to external social media policies. I remember where I was when that policy came out earlier this year. I was in a cabin in the Norwegian Alps with Scott Helm, and he came and he said, hey, have a look at this. You wouldn't believe what he's just done. And we're like, that's ridiculous. And it was, and it got rolled back. But it was funny to watch everyone kind of lose their minds. Ken says, suddenly saw a post from Ben Fordham on my following reader. Following reader, I do not wish to follow Ben Fordham. Ben Fordham is an Aussie journalist. From memory, he has had some issues. Like, I understand that. That might not be someone that you want to see. And I guess this is the problem. How do you simultaneously give people content which is relevant to them as well as monetize the platform? I wonder if part of the problem here, and this is what we might see with the other ones as well over time, is that ultimately for sustainability there has to be monetization at a sustainable level. And I know some people argue, but I think it is very feasible that Twitter was having a lot of financial problems in terms of actually being able to run in a sustainable fashion. So my point is like I see the challenge. Daryl says, having used Threads for just a few hours, I found the algorithm of people I'm following and suggested new content more positive, interesting, maybe like TikTok, but I'm not using it. Well, that's a good time to talk about the other one. So if we go back through the chronology of things, I think it was late last year, wasn't it? September last year, that Elon did the Twitter thing. And then people got very upset about that for various reasons. We all know the reasons. And a lot of people went to Mastodon, and then that was going to be the new thing because it's Fediverse, etc. And then some of that was good, but then there's echo chambers of information there. It's like, okay, you're on the InfoSec Mastodon, you're just seeing a lot of InfoSec. And I got the sense, reading some of the people that I follow and respect, that possibly became a little bit of what people didn't like about Twitter as well. The thing just got very, very big and possibly out of control with information. And then Blue Sky came along and everyone's like, okay, well, we'll jump on Blue Sky. Like, this is the one that is really like Twitter reimagined. And then that seems to be very, very, very early days and people are still needing invites. And then, of course, Threads has popped up in the last week. And a lot of people are going there because, like, why not give more of your data to Facebook and Instagram? Like, what could go wrong with that? And there is an irony to this, where people are departing a platform like Twitter because of concerns and going to Meta, which was so, so, so out of favor, particularly a few years ago because of a lot of the Facebook shenanigans. So now we have a lot of platforms. Now that creates another problem, in that we have this fragmentation, where up until the Twitter shenanigans, I would go to Facebook, and I'd post things that my mum and dad would see and my neighbours and other people that I was friends with. And it was mostly stuff about travel or if I do a blog post or something. I wouldn't ask a question on there that was technical. And I'd go to Twitter and I got a healthy following there. And they're the folks that I'd ask questions, like today, about phone spoofing stuff. We'll talk about later on if my battery lasts that long. And that was fine. And then Instagram, I'd go there and watch photos of people's breakfast and things like that. And I, yeah, like it just, at least in my mind, it was fairly segmented in terms of what you did where. But now we've got, obviously the incumbent being Twitter, and we've got Mastodon, and we've got Blue Sky, and we've got Threads, and everyone's kind of spread out across everything. And before I did this video, I was like, all right, stuff it. I'll just post this to everything. I'll post it to Twitter, and I'll post it to Mastodon, and post it to Threads. And then, yeah, we'll just like see who turns up. I don't know where people come from. And in a perfect world, you'd go, well, now we need some other sort of third-party app that could plug into the APIs of all of these things, so you could just blast it everywhere. But of course, you can't do that because Twitter's pretty much killed the API access and all the other third-party platforms. So that's kind of messed that up. And then when in the past, I have posted the same thing to Twitter and Mastodon, I've had people on Mastodon get very cranky because they'll say, well, you shouldn't be cross-posting. It should be original content on Mastodon. Otherwise, you're part of the problem. What am I meant to do? Like now just spend all of this time like rewriting tweets and making everything original on every single platform. It becomes so messy. I can't imagine, and maybe I'll be wrong, but I can't imagine we're going to, in the years to come, end up having four competing platforms largely to the same audience, at least in the InfoSec software dev audiences that I travel in, and they'll all actually be sustainable. It just doesn't seem to make sense. I have some final thoughts on that, but looking at the comments here. William says, not available in Europe because of the data slurping. So I assume that's Threads. And originally it only launched in the US. And then today on a whim, like I just did a search for Threads app and I found it in the Aussie App Store and I downloaded it and now I'm on Threads. Ken says, Mastodon, I assume he came from Mastodon. William, is that not what Threads will try to do with Mastodon? I don't even know anymore. Ken says Mastodon is the new vegan. Oh. That's pretty funny. I think that's, I'll park that one there, but I might use that somewhere else later on. Thanks, Ken. So we've got this sort of odd fragmentation, and I lament it a little bit. I guess the final point I wanted to make here is that the reason why I'm still on Twitter and I'm still using Twitter really extensively is that that is where the people are. And it's the same reason why I'm still on Facebook. You know, you've got 2 billion plus people on Facebook. And every now and then something else pops up and people are like, oh, you should come here. Bring all your friends here. Yeah, I mean, I have every friend I have on, and everyone's got their own method of doing this, but every friend I have on Facebook is someone that I know personally, that I want to share personal things from my life on. Now, quite some years ago, I just started making every post I did on Facebook public. So I've been doing a bunch while we're here on holidays. If you'd like to follow my Facebook, troyhunt.com Facebook link. And I just ended up taking the approach that if you put it on social media, even if you try and target an audience to a limited set of people, there's always the likelihood that it's going to escape beyond that anyway. So stuff it. I'll just put stuff out there that I'm happy to have public. And a bunch of it is of my family enjoying the scenery and so on here. And that's fine. But I guess with Twitter, I've got going on 220,000 followers there. When I want to discuss something, that's where the people are. And I do feel like a lot of the platform exodus from the circles that I'm in has been very much around the InfoSec people. I feel, personal opinion, less so the dev people, less so the 3D printing people, less so the IoT people and the other groups that I'm involved in. I don't imagine, and this is not like the measure by which we should judge our lives, but I don't imagine, for example, our Prime Minister is on Threads or Blue Sky. And it's not that it's that important to me, but I can go to Twitter and I will see him in my feed and there might be some interesting stuff in there. Today, I had an issue around phone number spoofing, which we'll talk about in a moment. And I went to Twitter and I posted the question and I got a lot of responses very quickly. And if you believe the numbers that Elon talks about, and I think he'd be hard-pressed to lie out, and see, now people are going to go, yes, but he lies all the time. I think he'd be hard-pressed to lie outright about things like the number of human minutes or however they measure it every day. But it seems that is very high. And I get a lot of replies very, very quickly. So for me, a lot of those communities are still there and very active, including the likes of Telstra, my telco. And I got an immediate reply from them, and I got DM communication with them. Like, that is where the mass of people are. Now, whether any one of those other three platforms is better or not by any other reasonable measure is really not the issue. The issue is that if I want to get quick responses from a telco, if I want to shame a company, if I want to ask for a security contact somewhere, it's going to be on Twitter until there is a critical mass on another platform. And I think it's going to be proverbially pushing shit uphill to try and get that critical mass on any one of those other platforms. So my hope is that the shenanigans that are happening on Twitter at the moment, and the flip-flopping to me is the biggest issue. Suddenly out of the blue, something new comes along. And I do think people overreact, but it's unsettling. And I get that. So hopefully the flip-flopping settles down, the mass of people there settles down, the other platforms maybe become more niche communities, and hopefully I don't have to keep posting everything to like four or even more platforms in the very near future. Last thing on that. Affliction of Armada. I'm a minute or so behind. Similar on Reddit, people protesting their kneecapping third-party clients by moving to Discord, which bans third-party clients. Of course, a lot of subreddits went dark recently because of protests over that. You ever feel like people just really like to get angry on the internet? You know, like that is a thing. That is a hobby, I'm sure, for many, many people. All right. Whilst I still have battery, let's move on to something else. I mentioned people spoofing my phone number. Someone's spoofing my phone number. Now, I am conscious of my security and my privacy, a bit hypocritical not to be. So anytime I see something a bit abnormal, I pay attention. And yesterday, here in Thailand, on the other location over there, I had a call come in, and then it dropped before I had a chance to answer. Happens all the time, who cares about it? Aussie number. And then I had another one come in and I answered it, and I get calls from numbers I don't recognize all the time. And a lot of the time it's things like journalists wanting to talk about security stories. So I always answer, and it might be valid. And this one was an Aussie guy who was like, "Hi, I missed a call from this number." It's like, "No, you didn't. It wasn't me." And he was nice enough. So I was like, "Look, mate, I didn't call you." And I was thinking, was it close to when I had this other missed call that just dropped before I had a chance to answer? And I was thinking, like, is it that one of those sort of cross-country things where it just went to voicemail really quickly and I couldn't answer it or something like that? But he was a nice guy. And we sort of went, okay, that's just a bit weird, and I passed it off as being nothing. And then he SMS'd me minutes afterwards, and I still got the message here. He says, "Someone is using your number as a spam call then, Troy," laughy face. And he's showing me his recent missed calls that show they're from my number, 2:23 p.m., 2:24 p.m. yesterday. I was like, yeah, okay, that is weird. And then I didn't know, like, is this someone that knows me, or... You know, I normally say my name when I answer the call, and that's where he got my name from. And then today, similar thing. I had a missed call, dropped before I managed to answer it. And then I had another call come through, and it was a lady in Australia. And she said, "Hi, I've missed a call from this number." And I'm like, "Ah, it really wasn't me." But it's interesting because yesterday, someone said the same thing. So, phone number spoofing is a thing. And I'm learning as I go here. I'm happy to admit I don't know a lot about phone number spoofing. I just know it is possible. So what my best understanding of this is that someone has been able to start sending spam and spoof my number. Now, I'm not concerned my SIM has been hijacked. I still have full access to my phone service. I'm getting inbound calls from people saying that they missed calls from me. I have access to SMS. I've had no other strange activity in any other accounts or any other weird things like that. So that bit is not stressing me. I felt it was spoofing. I've been in touch with Telstra, my telco. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I got a barrage of responses to my tweet before about this, with loads of people saying, yes, this is a thing. It's happened to me before. Have a look at the tweet earlier on. Have a look at all the responses. I didn't put it on Blue Sky or Mastodon or Threads. It's just on Twitter, because that's where the people are. It went through to Telstra, I put a, I'd logged a ticket with Telstra actually. And what was really nice about it is I logged a ticket and then I got an email back like a couple of minutes later from someone that knew me, which was really nice because I felt the love. Someone who said, hey, remember when we were at this conference together at a certain time, which was great. So it seems like there are some things that they may be able to do to mitigate the problem. But reading a lot of the responses, if another telco allows someone to make an outbound call and set the number on the way out, then that's a very hard thing to stop. Now, what we really need is some sort of DKIM equivalent, a common idea, SPF DKIM-like equivalent that we have for email for phone numbers. Now, many people responded to me today and said, yes, there is. There is, oh geez, what is it now? It's a funny acronym because a lot of people sent the same thing. What was it? The acronym was familiar. Yes, Ezra and James Bond. The acronym was STIR SHAKEN. So apparently there is a STIR/SHAKEN model which does some sort of number verification in terms of like the outbound call. Now, I would imagine that there should be some sort of a combination of SPF/DKIM model for phone numbers, which appears not to be consistently implemented by telcos. Does it matter? And I mean, this is the pointy end of it. Does it matter if someone is spoofing my number? I'm going to get the odd person call me up and go, hey, I missed a call from you. By the way, who does that? I get so much random junky calls. If I was to go through and just like call back every missed number, I don't know, maybe lonely people. So I don't think it actually matters that much. So far, I'm at a rate of one call a day. We might see if whatever Telstra's been able to do actually has some sort of impact on that, which would be lovely. But otherwise, you just got to kind of live with it. I guess it just becomes the spam of phones. Yeah. Which is a shame, because we already get so much crap through phones. Okay, next thing. Actually, I just saw some comments there. What came in there? Let's try and stay on track here. Roland says, trying to send another donation to Have It Been Pwned, I guess, if Troy has to scam people while on vacation. Oh no, something's got to pay for those bottles of wine down. Fortunately, a lot cheaper than buying wine in Indonesia. It's one of my lessons lately. William says, phone spoofing is regularly happening in Ireland, usually by scammers. Which also, it got me thinking a bit, because I get spam calls all the time. And they're usually from what looks like an Aussie mobile number, starts with 04. And you sort of go, well, why doesn't the telco just kill the number? But if they're effectively, and I'm just going to relate this back to something I'm more comfortable with, if they're sending outbound mail via SMTP and setting the outbound email address, or the outbound phone number in this case, as someone else's, well, blocking that number doesn't really fix the problem, does it? The Fiction of a Martyr says, by my understanding, SS7, the signaling protocol between telcos, is a security train wreck designed as a network where everyone trusts each other and no carrier is dishonest or insecure. And in fairness, I don't think it's the carrier that's dishonest or insecure. I think it is the people using the carrier and the protocols within the carrier allow you to do this. I do feel it's a little bit like the observation that so much of the technology we have today was born in an era that was a simpler time. I mean, geez, look at how far HTML and CSS and JavaScript have taken us. The HTML that I was writing in 1995, dating myself, for the most part, blink and marquee tags aside, it's the same thing as what we write today. And we just wrap it with some more funky stuff and layers of abstraction and other things. But it's gone from a time where we built the most basic things to the time where every business has a website and a huge amount of our online trade or trade full stop is done online. So maybe we're just stretching the carriers and the phone system well beyond their intended purpose and it's playing catch up. I remember Scott Hellman always used to say with not having TLS by default, you know, the default was HTTP, we'd have no HTTPS, it was a special thing if you got a certificate, therefore you got a padlock, you used to get the green secure thing in Chrome. And he'd say, no TLS was always a design flaw, it was a design flaw of the web. And it was an understandable one because it was made at a time where we just didn't have to worry about traffic interception or authenticity and integrity and all the other rest of it. It was just a very, very different world. And it just, that old world came through into the new world, and then things started to go wrong. And I feel like that's where we are with phones in general. Obviously the spoofing thing, the amount of SIM porting slash SIM hijacking that we see is a real mess. Fiction of Marty, SS7 comes from the 80s. Not so easy to bolt on robust security while maintaining compatibility. And that's actually a very fair observation. I think so many of the challenges we have is trying to build secure systems whilst still making things work. Last thing, just fresh in today, I will write a blog post about this, so I'll probably talk more about it next week when I'm back home. I have my 13th MVP award today. That has come through. I'm super, super happy about that. It went to my old email address for some reason. I don't know why. So I didn't see it until very late. And I'm seeing all of these friends on Facebook and Twitter, mostly, tweeting and Facebooking about their renewals and their awards. And I was like, where's mine? Have you forgotten? I've had a good year. I've done well. So that has come through today. 2011 was the first time I got that award. And it was... It was just like such a seminal moment in for the wildlife here. I'll talk about the wildlife when I finish this, and then we can just churn out the battery on that. It was a seminal moment in my career, and the relationship with Microsoft has remained massive. Obviously, all of Have I Been Pwned is built on Microsoft, and then the Cloudflare things wrap around that. So it's just enormously important. Speaking of Cloudflare, I will be at Cloudflare Connect in Sydney next month. So there's a bunch of other events and things coming up that I'll be announcing shortly. Cloudflare Connect in Sydney next month, doing a closing keynote there, which I'm very much looking forward to, given Cloudflare are a wonderful, wonderful company in terms of the bits and pieces that they build and how dependent I've become on them. Also, super nice people too, just putting that out there. Another thing coming up later this month, very, very local Aussie thing, Splendor in the Grass. I'm going to be at the Tech Tent or something like that, with Adam Spencer, MC, and Chris Gatford, and someone else I have not yet met, and I forget her name. She's a doctor of something, so sounds very interesting. We're going to be doing the tech things there at what Charlotte says it's like Coachella. So apparently that's meant to be good, but I'm going to be there later this month as well. So that'll be cool. Last bit, I said I'd talk about the wildlife. Because I've got all the important stuff out of the way now. So this is a very, very jungle area. If I just like pick the camera up and rotate, it's like jungle, 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 all the way around to there. Here's kind of cool. We've seen a couple of snakes here, which is kind of cool. Like Charlotte came out of the toilet yesterday at the restaurant. She's like, come and have a look at this. There's a snake like literally outside the window. And it looked like what we would know as a green tree snake in Australia, which is kind of cool, just curled up outside the glass of the toilet. We saw one on the road this morning that had seen better times, unfortunately. There are a whole bunch of lizards here, pretty normal stuff that we see here in Australia. Just saw Ken's message, it won't rain at Splendor this year. I was invited last year as well, and I'm glad I didn't go. I know it was an absolute mud fest at Splendor, so hopefully this year is going to be okay. A lot of birds, a lot of bird life here, obviously a lot of fish and so on. We're out kayaking today, saw that. The other island we were at had the two really, really cool things they had. They had lots of monkeys, which are always fascinating. Yes, we've had all our rabies shots, so I don't want to get scratched or bitten by a monkey, but we are well positioned should that happen. And a lot of water dragons and like monitors as well, like those big kick-ass lizards that are, you know, 2 meters long or something. So that was really cool just to sort of see that wildlife. And it's, you know, we have a lot of wildlife around us in Australia, everything from, you know, snakes to sharks to literally dolphins in our backyard. But here is quite different. So, yeah, we don't have any monkeys. Okay, so it's pretty much rounding it out. We've got another couple of nights here, and then we've got a little bit of time in Phuket. We've got to go to Singapore and have some chili crab on the way home because we've got a long layover, and we'll be back in Australia next week. So I'll come to you next week from the home office again. It won't be as interesting as this, but hopefully the sound will be a little bit better, and I won't be worried about my battery, which managed to make it all the way through. Thanks for watching, folks. See you from Australia next week.